What's going on, everybody? It is 10:50 a.m. on Saturday, June the 8th. Saturday, June the 8th of 2019. And that means it is finally, mercifully, time for another trip down the homeward path. For those of you who are new, this is the show by me, Adam, an MTG dad, for all of you at home who are playing Magic the way that I do. We are on a budget, time, financial. We have other things. We have other commitments. But we still love this game. You know, it's important to us. It's just maybe not the most important thing to us. But you know who we are the most important thing to is our sponsor over at inkedgaming.com. Use our promo code CCMTG10 at checkout. You'll get 10% off your order. You can accessorize your play space. You can do all the cool stuff. Get all the things. Playmats, dice bags, sleeves, gaming crates, deck boxes, all the stuff. If you like what you're hearing here, and for some unknown reason you have not checked out the network over at constructedcriticism.com, do that. Do yourself that favor. This week's episode, the upcoming episode of Constructed Criticism, this next week is going to be a mailbag episode. So they're answering all of your questions. Spencer, Mason, and Trey are answering all of your questions. Common knowledge is, you know, exploring new things on Pauper thanks to Modern Horizons. And then, like, John just keeps doing what he does over on Hive Mind. It's great. And we also have a new podcast being added to the network is Arena Mythic podcast, where we're talking about what it takes to get to Mythic on Arena. So, you know, the network's chock full of stuff for everybody right now, even if we did lose even odds by absorbing them into Constructed Criticism. And if you want to support this show directly, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. This show's always going to be free. I'm never changing that. But if there is something you like that I'm doing that you feel like you really want to help me do better, feel free to donate. I'm going to be sometime this week going through and actively fixing the Patreon rewards. So tier one is going to be access to the Discord. Tier two is going to be getting your deck on my deck tech series, like letting me do one of my video techs on your deck, whatever format, whatever deck it is. We're going to talk about it. And then I'm still trying to figure out for sure what I want to do with tier five, but we're working on that. We're going to get it fixed. So you're aware. So all of that out of the way, let's talk about what's been going on while I've been away. Cause it's been a while. All right. Modern Horizons is on the way. And when I say on the way, it pre-released yesterday, technically today at midnight, but you know, semantics, whatever. Set looks great. I think it's going to have a bigger impact on Modern than a lot of people realize. Force of Negation is a huge step in the right direction of fighting all the unfair things that have been going on. We've had a lot of nonsense being played, and Lord knows I'm tired of it, and I don't even play Modern that often, so I can only imagine how people that play the format regularly are doing with it. So, also, we had the London Mulligan is becoming official courtesy of the 2020 Corset pre-release, I believe. And up until then, like, non-competitive REL events can go ahead and start using it to get some practice in, get us accustomed to it. So I'm looking forward to that, seeing, you know, if there's a difference we can make in deck building to adjust to London Mulligans, maybe being able to trim a land or two from some of these decks that are otherwise playing just a ton of them, you know, help mitigate some of the flooding that's been going on. Like, I can only imagine the mono red deck in Standard, or like my Is It Phoenix deck, being able to trim a land or two under the London Mulligan to be able to just smooth out some of these opening hands. Maybe I'm crazy, but I'm definitely going to try and push it and see what I can do. See what I can get away with, to say nothing of what it means for Pauper with, you know, Brainstorm, Ponder, Preordain. Even though we don't have Gush and Probe anymore, we still have all the cantrips. Like, I want to do a little bit of digging and see just how low I can go on a land count in a deck and still get away with what I want to do. What else? Well, that's it for what I really want to talk about while I was away. I know I have been gone for a little while. The non-magic related things that have happened while I was away, for those of you who haven't been following for very long, we just had a child. We welcomed our third child, Nolan Conrad, to the family about 2 weeks ago. It was 2 weeks and a day. Delivered at a healthy 10 pounds, 8 ounces, 22 and a half inches long, and delivered via painstaking C-section. And then Daddy, and I can only assume a combination of the heat, the fact that I hadn't eaten or drank anything from 3 o'clock that morning until, you know, the point after we had delivered at like 8:02 in the morning, and the fact that I just had this like wave of relief rush over me when he was finally delivered and everybody was okay. Daddy lost consciousness for a few seconds. I just dropped. Thankfully, I was sitting on a stool and I just kind of slumped over, and they caught me before I fell and, you know, woke me up and got me back to the room with Nolan. But the week, it's been an interesting few weeks getting ready for all of that. And thank you for everybody who is still listening, despite the fact that I went on what was almost a month-long hiatus. I really appreciate your support. This is one of the most fun things I get to do in my life. Being a father, then being a husband, then doing this podcast, like that's the hierarchy. So getting to do all of this with all of you is just something I really enjoy doing. Getting to talk magic with a bunch of people who are not necessarily like me. You know, I don't want to talk magic with people who fall into lockstep with everything that I do. That doesn't make anybody better as a player, but just people who are interested in improving, but, you know, aren't capable of necessarily doing the things that the pros get to do on a regular basis. Maybe we don't have access to the best cards. Maybe we don't have access to reliable testing schedules, all of that. That's what this show is supposed to be about. And I thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for still being here, even though I wasn't for the last several weeks. So with that, all of that out of the way, let's dive into this week's main topic, because it's kind of a doozy. This week, I'm talking about 5 harsh truths about playing Magic on a budget. And when I say playing Magic on a budget, I don't mean building $30 decks once every 2 or 3 weeks. That's not what I'm talking about. When I say playing Magic on a budget, I mean what I end up doing on Magic. Like, my Arena experience is completely free to play. I have never spent a cent on Arena. And then my paper experience outside of my initial investment when I first started back, which was to trade my Yu-Gi-Oh! Collection at the time in, and we bought 2 board games and a box of Battle for Zendikar. And shortly after that, a friend of mine gave me about $150 to build my first standard deck when I got back in. Since then, all totaled, is in summer of 2016. All totaled since then, I have spent a grand total of $50 on Magic. Now, that's not to say I haven't gotten cards, I haven't acquired things, I haven't, you know, but it's to say that I have not spent any sizable amount of capital on Magic outside of shipping costs to trade in cards. That's the long and short of it. That's what I do. That's how my Magic hobby finances itself. It's obviously not from great finishes, because like I play FNMs and the odd 1K, you know, standard showdown, that kind of stuff. So it's obviously not from just opening a ton of prize cards and getting it that way. Especially this year, because I just have not gotten to play as much, what with the move and then getting ready for Nolan. I play a ton of Arena, but I don't get to go out and play very often. So it's just a different animal altogether. So the first thing to remember, the first really harsh truth I can give you about playing Magic on a budget is it is hard. There's no getting around it. Playing Magic on a budget is rough, especially if your goal is to compete, like to be reasonably competitive, to be able to challenge for, you know, a reasonable chance of winning whatever event you sign up for. Competing is hard enough when you have access to all the cards. Doing it with a handicap of not being able to get all the cards you need is harder. I know it sounds simple, but it's something that takes a little bit of realization. That's not to say we have to do, like, we have to play really bad stuff that's like off the beaten path in order to compete. We can do that. We can do that, but that's not what I recommend doing. I've had much more success by just adopting a mainstream deck and sticking with it than I have jumping from jank to jank to jank to jank to jank, trying to find something that'll isolate me for one tournament and get there. The second thing, the second really kind of harsh truth about Magic on a budget is it's not glamorous. Nobody cares that you're on a budget. You are highly unlikely to win or even contend at a high-level event playing on a budget. It's just the fact of the matter. When you have to devote a percentage of your normal Magic capital to entry fees, like for a Grand Prix or an SCG Open, those events are not hard to, or those events are not easy to win when you have all your cards. Those events are not easy to top eight when you have all the cards. So when you don't have all the cards, when you are forced into playing something because of card availability, it makes your road harder. And when you start talking to hyper-competitive players, a lot of them, it's not like callousness, it's not elitism. They just will not be playing that deck because maybe it's not better positioned that week. They don't feel it gives them the best chance to win. But in your case, it definitely does because it's literally the only thing you can play. So it never looks particularly glamorous to be playing Magic on a budget because nobody wants to give you the benefit of a doubt for like why you're not playing something. Like, you know, I took Mono Blue Tempo to Grand Prix Memphis, and there were several in the local area, especially. They're like, well, why don't you play Sultai? Why don't you play Esper Control? Like, I don't have those cards. I have Mono Blue, and it's the deck I played the most, so it's what I'm going to play. And I didn't do great, but I felt like the deck was a really good choice. Although it doesn't really matter because that's just what I had. It was the best deck that I had access to. And those are qualifying words that we have to put on a lot. And that brings us into the next harsh truth about budget Magic. You will rarely get to play the decks you want. I love control decks. I love playing Magic, first of all. That's already a hindrance on a budget, just playing Magic at all. You know, if you're going to do it at any kind of a high, you know, medium high level, it's going to put a damper in your budget. But if you're not playing locally, or if you're not trying to like spike a big event by having the deck of the weekend, and you just specialize in something like I have on several occasions with decks like Mono Blue, Mono Red, the blue black tempo shell that I've been playing for a long time here, the Grohl deck that Luke is playing, words are failing me. What else was it? The Rakdos deck that I've done attack on, like they're not necessarily the greatest choice all the time. Sometimes they're going to be awful, but specializing in a deck and mastering is going to reward you, especially playing on a budget, more than it will trying to jump from deck to deck to deck to spike one event, because you can consistently finish near the top of more events with a reasonable deck that you can play well. And that's a hard one to get through to a lot of budget Magic players because they don't want something that's like what everybody else is doing. They want to be off the beaten path. They not only do they want to not have to spend a lot of money on stuff, they also want to do something different. They want to be special. They want to be unique. And I hate to say this. I hate to be this callous about it. But just because you're unique doesn't mean you're useful when it comes to deck building. That's one of the hardest things to get adjusted to in playing budget Magic. Being different doesn't necessarily mean good. Usually it doesn't mean good at all. And I hate to be that callous about it, but it's the truth. Having, you know, the difference between a cheap deck and a good deck that is cheap is night and day. The difference between mono blue tempo and something like what Brett was playing prior to Kaladesh rotating out of standard, what they called caps, and it was a Power Stone Shard kind of turbo mana deck. Night and day. You know, the difference between mono red aggro and something like, you know, the Memekin deck. Night and day. One of these decks is going to perform consistently a whole lot more. It's going to do what you want a whole lot more. And that brings us to point number four. By playing on a budget does not make you superior to people playing without your constraints. Quite frankly, hardened tournament grinders that are, you know, trying their best to achieve their professional Magic dreams, they don't care about your budget. That's not to say they're bad people. That's not to say they're mean people. That's not to say they don't want to help. They don't care what your budget is when you sit down across from them to play. They are there with the deck that they are armed with that they think gives them the best chance to win. That's what they're here for. If you are not doing the same thing, you are doing yourself a disservice. And to then turn around and blame everything that happens to you on the fact that you couldn't get their deck, or they must not be very good because they had to just spend a bunch of money on deck, whatever. Don't do that. Don't be that person. Because I have taught as many lessons as I have learned from playing against people who had more money to spend than I did. I've showed them that cards they disregarded as not effective were a lot more effective than they thought they were. The first time Nick witnessed Mono Blue after I'd been singing its praises forever, he was like, okay, I kind of owe you an apology. That deck is really good. You know, sometimes you can find something like that, but most of the time, you know, you can't live for those moments. What you've got to live for is putting yourself in the position to win the games that are in front of you, just like you would on a more competitive budget, but you're not on a more competitive budget. That's literally the only difference. You're both trying to win the tournament. You're just trying to win with less resources at your disposal. That does not make you better than them. That does not make them, you know, worse people than you. It's just the fact of the matter. That's what's going on. And the last, most important truth about budget Magic: if you make smart decisions with the capital that you have, it gets easier. And that is to say, again, I started with the contents of a box of Battle for Zendikar and $150 3 years ago. And outside of buying the mono red staples that I needed before the PPTQ back in October, you know, when Guilds of Ravnica released, I have not spent a cent of actual cash on Magic. I just haven't done it. I haven't needed to. Part of that is that I had a pretty good eye for getting into and then out of decks. I had a pretty good idea of like when to get off of something and switch it into something else. I tried to stay ahead of rotation. I made less glamorous decisions in the short term in order to make better ones in the long term. Things like trading out of Hazoret and Glorybringer and such before they rotated out of standard. Not because I thought the decks were bad, but because I wanted to position myself better for after they rotated. I wanted to have a plan. It requires more of you when it comes to card evaluation, card acquisition, because you have to stay further ahead of things. Maximize your value. And that goes back to point one. It's hard. You will be wrong a lot, because I have been. I know I have been. You know, there've been cards and decks that I've gotten out of maybe a little too early, and then I ended up having to pick up a couple of pieces and put them back together. You know, use the resources at your disposal, consume as much content as you can to stay on top of not just metagame trends, but like what sleeper cards there are, what the format is doing, like things that are going on in Standard, Modern, Legacy, Pauper, Commander, like whatever. But the more informed you are, and the better decision, the smarter decisions you make, the easier it gets to play Magic on a budget. Because as you do it correctly over time, your budget begins to grow a little bit. That's what's been happening with mine. That's how I was able to get into like the entirety of Temur Reclamation. I have a mana base that will I have the lands to support Grixis perfectly. I have, you know, I have right now we have either Rakdos or Gruul aggro, and then a variation on the VTCLA blue black Terramander, and then Izzet Phoenix, along with a portion of Modern staples in Izzet colors, and Thoughtseize, Inquisition, the mana. Again, we have the mana base for Grixis with deltas and Bloodstained Mires and all of that, and that's something else I treat as a resource. Every once in a while, I just have to double check, and I want to see, do I need to get out of this stuff? You know, it's a constant churning of your collection where you are, instead of trying to constantly make it bigger, you are trying to make it more valuable. You are trying to make it stronger. And that's a really hard thing to get accustomed to. One of the biggest godsends in my time playing Magic since I've come back is discovering that I have a place to unload bulk to, fairly nearby. For those of you who live in the Nashville area, that is McKay's used bookstore. McKay's is the place that I do my bulk trading with. They weigh the cards, and then they give you store credit, and then you can go through the bulk that other people have dropped off and fill up a bag for $2. So, you know, I've been medium fortunate. Like, I haven't done like a couple of guys have and claim to have found something like a Lion's Eye Diamond in there, but I found stuff like Git Probe when I was first trying to get back into Pauper. I found a couple of Gushes before they got banned, you know, little things like that. And then as far as vendor trading, I do a lot of it through two websites. Because I play two card games right now, and a buddy of mine decided to give me a good starting point for a new Yu-Gi-Oh! Collection, and I don't play Yu-Gi-Oh! With any kind of frequency, but like when he comes down, I'll go play a tournament with him. And because of it, I have started, I've rekindled my old business relationship with CoolStuffInc.com, because that's the place that I've had the best luck moving Yu-Gi-Oh! Singles and bulk. And then for Magic, I primarily go through abugames.com. And I know there are several of you that are going to like crucify me for that because of the tournament prize support that they've had of late. But they are also the place that I've gotten the best store credit deals on trading in my singles. The cost of the cards is not typically high enough to offset the massive boon in store credit bonuses, but even still, like, I'm not moving my bulk rares there. I probably move those to Cool Stuff before I move them to ABU. You know, it's a bunch of little stuff that adds up together to eventually set me up for what I feel like is success. And that's really the secret. Another really, really strong option for those of you who haven't listened to Constructive Criticism and don't know what I'm talking about is their sponsor over at Oasis Games, where you can use promo codes CCMTG on your first order to get 15% off, or Would That Be Good all the time to get 4% off. And then, you know, they buy cards, they sell cards at under TCG market price. So, you know, couple your, you know, whatever trade credit you get with their discounts, and that's probably a pretty good deal too. I'm going to have to try it one of these days. I have just not gotten around to doing it yet. And then never forget about your LGS, you know, little things like trading in a couple of high-end staples that they are going to need that you don't like the buy price you're getting online anyway. You don't want to have to pay shipping and then get a lower buy price. I trade into my LGS and I get store credit, and I just bank up store credit so that I can enter events for free. Or, you know, if a product comes out that I really, really want and I can't find it anywhere online, I'll go see if Goose has it. All of these little things can add up to make your experience of playing Budget Magic a whole lot simpler. And that's really all I have to say. Like, the five truths about Budget Magic. It's hard. It's not glamorous. You're not going to get to play what you want, but you will usually get to play what you need. You are not better than people who don't play on a budget. And if you make good decisions, it gets easier. So, speaking of easy, let's talk about where to find me. You can find me on Twitter at HomewardPathMTG. You can find me on Facebook. I am Adam Spain, like the country, exactly like the country, sometimes in temperament too. You can join the Facebook group, the Homeward Pathfinders. If you're a patron of the show, you'll have access to the Discord. Also, it's the patron Pathfinders. And upcoming content, obviously, I try to do one of these episodes every week when I can. And I'm also doing the video tech series on YouTube, where I'm breaking down a deck a week in Standard, Modern, Legacy, Pauper. Well, Standard, Modern, Pauper, Commander. One of the patron rewards is going to be getting your deck in the queue to be covered on that, if that's something you're interested in. Otherwise, I'm just going to be, you know, doing polls, and the winner of the poll is going to be the one that gets covered. Later today, I will also be uploading the second one of those, which is going to be Lucas Fahey's Gruul deck, which is just a thing of beauty, and I think it's something everybody needs to know about, especially with Gruul mid-range on the rise. And then that brings me now to my favorite segment every week. It's the best thing about being kind of the dad's podcast, if you will. Oh, come on, where'd you go? I turned the Wi-Fi on. Technical difficulty sitting in the house. This is fun. Let's see, where'd it go? We've had a few of these since the last time I did an episode, so I'm gonna have to go way back. Let's see. Oh, I'm just gonna pick a date. We'll just go from there. How about that? Let's see. Here we go. First one is from Yanni Mizium Tank on Twitter. It says, Magic YouTube idea. Magic themed hot ones where you bring on different magic personalities and have them eat hot wings. The title? Burning Inquiries. Said, first of all, hashtag MTG dad joke. Second of all, I'm here for this because I would totally watch the heck out of that. Next one we have from Weird Cards, the people behind the creation of the Oathbreaker format. Says, who will be the first to make a Snowthbreaker deck, with the image being the new snow-covered plains? I dig it. I'm here. Oh, come on. Do this right. There we go. The conversation, Daniel Combs says, Days and Gitaxian Probe. I mean, Gush is busted, but common? And Andrew Elliott says, I was kind of surprised by Days. And Mason says, would you say it left you Dazed and Confused. Yes, as someone who was playing all but Days in my deck, yes, it did. It says, and then we have one from the girl with the lotus tattoo on Twitter. It says, oh crap, when I retweeted the Urza, I should have said, now that's a commander with a good head on his shoulders. For those of you who don't know the lore reason why, that's absolutely hysterical. First of all, in the original story, Urza had his head severed by Gerard before he died. Well, as he died. And the only reason he did in fact die is because Gerard didn't remove the stones from Urza's eyes, which became Karn's Planeswalker's bark. So, you know, Urza headless. And then there was the first card depicting Urza being a five mana, a five color Planeswalker from Unstable that was literally Urza's head mounted on a spike on a desk. She says, too late. The opportunity is missed. It's these kind of moments that make you wish time travel was possible. Unfortunate, but great. And then we have Tales from the Pit, number 2049 from Mark Rosewater. It says, the first sliver had a bit of an identity crisis. It says, all other slivers get... Oh, yeah, there aren't any. Love it. And then Saffron Olive, Seth from MTG Goldfish says, people seem hyped for this card, but it's barely playable, probably with Life from the Loam, and it's Iula's Influence, the triple green enchantment that lets you trade a land from your hand to make a 2/2 green bear token. Steam Elephant says, more like barely playable with the spelling change. Glorious. I'm here for that. It's almost more than I can bear.
Oh, that's funny right there. I don't know. Puns are funny.
Another one from Mark Rosewater. This is one of my favorites. Tales from the Pit, number 2050, said, I'm disappointed Modern Horizons didn't run an Iula-themed ad campaign. Says, missing out on this supplemental set would be a grisly fate. You'll have to just grin and bear this innovation product. The reason this product goes straight to Modern is otherwise it would be Cub Standard. And then sign up for a fun-filled draft at your local game store. Oh, man. These jokes are killing me. We have Amy the Amazonian. Says, deck name suggestions. If you're playing Cavalcade of Calamity, Death by a Thousand Cuts. If you're playing High Alert, it's Death by a Thousand Butts. If you're playing Squirrels, it's Death by a Thousand Nuts. Glorious. Oh, come on. Work correctly, phone. And then we have the Snow Enchantment from Modern Horizons on Thin Ice. It's the single white mana, Snow Enchantment Aura. Enchant snow land you control, and when it enters the battlefield, you exile an opponent's creature until On Thin Ice leaves the battlefield. And Evan Irwin says, someone just dropped Journey to Snowware on this in the Magic Mike's Discord, and I'm sorry, guys, we've reached our final stop on the nickname train. And I feel compelled to read the rest of the comments and find the best ones. It says, chained on the rocks, chained on an iceberg. Let's see. The snow pun game is on thin ice, mister. Before you know it, they just snowball out of control. It says, just kidding. The dad puns must rain. I mean, flurry. Ha! More snow jokes. Uh-huh. Digging it. Tales from the Pit, number 2052, says, fun filled fact, all the planes in the multiverse have ninja. Usually only the ones on Kamigawa are slow enough to get caught on cards. I feel attacked. I love the Kamigawa ninjas. It's one of my reasons for loving that set so much. Oh, there's some more of the On Thin Ice jokes. Swords to Snowplows, Oblivion Rink, Journey to Snowware, and Banishing Ice. Oh, it's good. And then we have first it's the Oath Father. It says Oathbreaker on the radio and says when we play at the original meal table, we are #lunchbreakers. We play cheap decks, budget breakers. There's no shortage of irony or puns in this crowd when we do it in big rigs. We're breaker breakers. When you do it watching the Muppets, you'll be oath beakers. When we do it outside, we're oath rakers. I'll show myself to the door. When we dance, we're oath shakers. I thought you were going to say break dancers, says both are beautiful. Says when you're a member of a religious group in the 1600s, you're oath Quakers. And it says, thankfully, we are always true oath breakers, but not those oath fakers. And then Weird Card says, we'll bite. What oath breaker type are you? Says, when Kobe Bryant plays, he's an oath Laker. Oh, these are great. And we have Jonathan Medina says, MTG Money question says, why is Sol Ring still above $4 despite being printed regularly? And then says, answer, someone packing like 15 decks for a long weekend in the hometown. And I said, I'm fairly certain Brian Canada, who has working on 450 commander decks, is almost solely responsible. You see what I did there? Low ball, slow, you know, little soft pitch across the plate there. Anyway, and we have Brian Brunduin says, I got to preview some sweet cards in Modern today. Now, if you excuse me, I need to hop on my bike. What can I say? I love cycling. And the name of the article is Hitting for the Cycles. It's just mwah, chef's kiss. Perfect. And last but not least, Mark Rosewater, Tales from the Pit, number 2054. Hogak refused to give up its dream of becoming an actor despite all the rejection. And says, sorry, we can't cast you because you can't spend mana from... You can't actually spend mana to cast it. It has Convoke and Delve, so whatever. I love them all. I need more. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll do this again next week. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, refer them to the Twitter, the Facebook group, the Discord if you're a patron of the show. You know, get your money's worth. We'll catch you next week. And we'll have the Gruul deck tech up later. So have a good week, and I will catch you on the next trip down the homeward path. Take it easy.